Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Martha's left the vineyard. She's not there in the summer, whoever Martha may be. But the fact of the matter is the president's in trouble with his base, especially with his black base. They don't like the fact that he's got to cut something. And, of course, when you start cutting big, big, big government programs, some people get fired, some get pink slips. And the fact of the matter is, I mean, you don't want to know the reality of it, but African-Americans are overrepresented among the 22 million who work for local, state, and federal governments. That's something you got to know. It's a fact of reality. And so whenever there's a cutting in middle America and you get a recession, black America, frankly, seems to be affected the most because they are, in fact, a fact of reality for all people, including for all down below. White tour. And now he's on Martha's Vineyard, which the last I checked is 99.9% Lily White. People, esteemed Americans like Larry David, live there in the summer. And you know how fabulously American Larry David is. Comedian David Letterman, if you want to call him a comedian. Script reader lives there. Meg Ryan, Mike Wallace of 60 Minutes is a summer resident of Martha's Vineyard. You know, whoever he is, he's Mr. Meatloaf. I don't think he's really there anymore. But I think they do deliver meatloaf from Manhattan to Martha's Vineyard by helicopter, not Marine One, of course. It was a favorite haunt of late anchorman Walter Crankenhouse. Spike Lee is there. Sorry, I guess there's a little change there in the demographics. None other than the esteemed great Jewish American Alan Dershowitz seems to flock to the vineyard, and well, many other so-called celebrities regularly visit Martha's Vineyard, where the grapes of wrath are stored, and Obama seems to like it. He gets away from his troubles, and he gets away from his base. But if you actually analyze who's for it and who's against it, you will find that white-collar blacks would support his visit to the Martha's Vineyard, but I would think that blue-collar whites wouldn't support his junket to the vineyard. I do think that white-collar whites would support it. I think red-collar whites wouldn't support it. I think that black-collar blacks would not support it. I think that pink-collar albinos would not support Obama's trip, but I can't be sure. But there's no question that red-collar blacks would not support his vacation at this time. This is the Savage Nation. We're open for business. And the phone number, you know, 1-800-449-8255. There seems to be a lot of restiveness amongst the base. The radical left is really angry because they're cutting the government programs. They're cutting back on the government. What we the taxpayer call waste, they call gravy. You get how it works? In other words, the gravy train is getting cut off. What we in the middle class, and I include myself in the great middle class, call waste, they call gravy. And they fear that the gravy train, that gravy boat is drying up. Now listen to Waters now in clip 22, how racist she gets.
You're very proud to have a black face. First time in
Okay, again, you mean it's not, you're proud of him because he's a good president only because of his skin color? I thought that's about as racist as it gets. I never got on the air and said I'm proud that George Bush is president because he's a white man. I thought he was a terrible president, but had nothing to do with his race. It's the same with Obama. I think he's an awful president, not because of his racial makeup. So he's a horrible president. Now, even Pelosi, who lives in a world that is one of total control, absolute dictatorship, controlled from top to bottom, buttoned down, buttoned up, buttoned sideways. She's got parkas around everything in her life. Lost control at a town hall event that was set up for the communists in her neighborhood. Listen to what happens in clip 13.
Yeah. We supported the campaign of America. Now 21 states are begging for money to help us save the community.
Right, and I support that. I support that. And in this legislation, we included the CLASS Act, which takes us partway down the path.
Now she goes to 15.
That's okay. That's okay.
I don't know if we can stop it. Yeah. Too many of them.
No, wait, just one moment. Okay, you have made your point. You have made your point to me. If you want others in the room to understand your point.
Okay. Now the guard says that he can't control the crowd in the next clip. Listen to what happens.
Man, they're throwing stuff. We need to leave.
Look, I am going to have... Excuse me. I'm not leaving. You have made your point. Okay.
So she used a shield made of macaroni, and she survived the brickbats, apparently, even though the crowd told the brave Pelosi she had to leave. The surrounding macaroni shield, the invisible shield of macaroni, saved her. And she said that she heard them, and she's the wealthiest woman in Congress, next to Harmon Kardon's widow, Jane Harmon, the stereo congresswoman. So she's number one and number two, and yet she represents the poor. How does that work? Can anyone figure that out? Why is it the wealthiest love the poor so much? Why is it that the wealthiest are concerned so much about the poor? Has anyone been able to figure that one out? I have. I figured it out a long time ago. 1-800-449-8255. So we got, from top to bottom, Obama's wrecked the world. In Israel, the Arab Spring has yielded an invasion from the Gaza Strip by terrorists, no doubt aided or abetted by Egyptian security or Egyptian military itself. And they killed, the Nazi line goes, isn't it? Of course, as you well know, because the Jews are dying, it's of no interest, even though it was Obama who destroyed the special relationship between Egypt and the U.S. It was Jimmy Carter, the Jew hater, in cahoots with Brzezinski, the Jew hater. And I say those because I believe it to be factually true, not because I have anything against either of these fine gentlemen. As you know, I have the utmost respect for James Carter, former president, and Brzezinski as former national security advisor. I just don't know why every time I see Brzezinski, I imagine him in an SA or an SS uniform. I have no idea why that imagery crosses my mind. But nevertheless, it was by my research, and correct me if I'm mistaken, it was Jimmy Carter and Brzezinski and a few others in a think tank who came up with this concept of the Egyptian Revolution, the Arab Spring. And now we are seeing they have sowed the wind and they are reaping the hurricane, by the way. You don't understand that Obama has wrecked the world. He has literally destroyed the world. Now, of course, it's not on purpose because he's not that grand a man. It's because he's incompetent. He's inexperienced. He's surrounded by hardcore college leftists who have finally been able to throw down their textbooks and throw down the gauntlets and do everything that they dreamed they could do when they had total power, and they're doing it. And so the economy is wrecked. The Arabs are rioting throughout the Middle East. We could list the litany. There's no point in me giving you the litany, and I'm not Obama bashing. I'm, frankly, just Obama disclosing. If I were making any of this up, I wouldn't listen to it myself. But the fact of the matter is, he is the most terrible president in American history. As historians will eventually write, that's if, by the way, he doesn't win in 2012, and I'm the only one in the media who told you he will win in 2012 for two reasons. Here are the two reasons. He will win because the Republicans are running an incompetent campaign, and they want him to win. That's the way the scam works. They get together, they go to the Lakers game, they smoke the cigars in the back room, they drink whatever the water, or they don't smoke cigars, and they decide, all right, I'll give you another 4 years, but you got to throw us some gravy, all right, whatever, work it out. Then you, Schmo, you take over, Schmegray, we'll Schmegray and Schmeck you out, and we'll make believe we're against you for 8 years. So it works 8-8. That's how it works. I told you that over and over again. That's one reason. So how do they actually do it? The Republicans are not that incompetent that they're going to actually be able to throw the election to Obama. It can't be done that way. So they're allowing him, which he just did, by the way, before flying off to the grapes of wrath, he passed the DREAM Act, which Congress rejected. But he, of course, as you well know, is Junior Doc Duvalier, with dreams of becoming Papa Doc Duvalier, the U.S. version, and he signed with the stroke of a pen what the corrupt, evil Dick Durbin, the man who called our troops Nazis and stormtroopers, perhaps the most evil, incompetent man in the Senate is Dick Durbin of Illinois, in my opinion, that evil man, that little dictator fascist, who has been pushing because of the Hispanic lobby, because of the large number of illegal aliens in Illinois, particularly in Chicago. Dick Durbin is owned lock, stock, and barrel by them, the best I can figure out. So since he could not run it by the people and have it voted upon, because even the black American would vote against the DREAM Act for illegal alien people, based upon the fact that it would cut into their own gravy, he went and had Obama sign the DREAM Act. Did you know this or not? Obama is on the way to amnesty for illegal aliens, and I'm the only one who predicted that he would do this in order to make sure that 20 million to 30 million illegal aliens have the right, the illegal right, of course, to destroy America's constitutional republic in time for the next election. So now let's play the theme song for today's show, which will be that theme from The Grapes of Wrath, please, in clip 7. I'll take a little break and I'll take your calls. Let's hear the theme song in clip 7, if you don't mind. Oh, you get the joke. All right, let's take it. So, you know, I could ask you a baby question. Is it appropriate for Obama to take a vacation while the joblessness is so high and the world is in such wreckage? And you'll get two sides of the coin. No, it isn't. Yes, Bush took more. Yes, he should. No, he shouldn't. Let's not have a bad radio day. Can we have like a bad, a good radio day together? It's open mic to mic, but let's stick to the, let's just have a better time, you know, a little more, you know, meat on the bone, so to speak. A little more gravy on the turkey, however you want to put it. A little more cream on the coffee. A little more cap on the chino. I mean, something other than the basic, you know, 1+1=2 talk radio, which to me is as interesting as watching a parrot in a cage. I like parrots. A parrot in a cage is not interesting. I feel bad for them with a chain on their foot. I like a parrot in an outdoor aviary. I feel bad for birds in a cage. I don't like birds every time I've seen a bird in a cage with a thing on their foot, I feel like releasing it. Because it's more or less how I feel sitting here in front of the microphone, to be honest with you. West Virginia, Sean, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, I have a question regarding what I feel is, and I don't want to be cynical, but if in fact I'm wrong, I would love for your views on this. I feel like the concepts and ideals of our country in the last really year to year and a half have begun to change philosophically from the social, political, and even religious views that I have always traditionally felt America stood for. Am I mistaken in sensing that? And
no, you're absolutely right, because it's done by intent. A group of atheists took over the country, and they are doing everything they can as fast as they can to make certain that the Christian worldview is destroyed as quickly as possible in order to replace it with the Marxist worldview, which is atheistic and amoral. Now, that's the short answer to your question. The bigger question is, can it be reversed, which is what I think you're asking me.
Yes.
So now we go to the economy, because the economy is at the core of the meltdown. And you've got to understand that the gangsters who wrecked the economy have not yet paid the price for having wrecked the economy. In fact, most of their tail numbers are found at the Martha's Vineyard Jetport. If you had one reporter left in the United States of America worth a grain of salt, that reporter would have flown into Martha's Vineyard anonymously and written down the tail numbers of every plane at the Jetport, every G5, every Constellation jet, every single private jet on that airport has a tail number. And you can go to the internet and you could look at the tail numbers of those jets and find out who was there with the president. And you will see who melted down the economy in 2008. And you'll find out why he's licking ice cream and reading Brave New World. Now, having said that, the people who did it to us are doing it all over again. We have a great society created by the gangster government of LBJ, which is Medicare, Medicaid, earned income tax credits, food stamps, Pell Grants, greatly expanded Social Security, and we cannot pay for it. This government cannot deliver what they promised. They are running deficits of 10% of gross domestic product. We have a national debt over 100%. We have a national debt over 100% of our GDP. We are following Italy. We are on the same path that Greece followed. We have overextended this empire. We have overextended our commitments. We are facing fiscal bankruptcy. Obama cannot lead us out of this crisis because he and his cronies led us into this crisis.
Savage.
Timing is everything. There are those who question why President Obama chose now to go on vacation when the economy seems to be in such a world of hurt. There are others that say he needs a break. He needs to get refreshed before he gets back in the ring to confront so many problems that concern so many.
All right. Well, that's one way to look at it. There's another way, which is that the guy is just out to lunch and he's tired of his job. He's over his head. He's incompetent. And those who put him in power are there at Martha's Vineyard to tell him what to do next, in a private setting of their homes. It's the way politics works. I mean, what's so complex about that? It's always been true that moneyed interests produce the political class. What's unusual about this? You mean Obama will be the first man that was not put in power by moneyed interests? So therefore I'm correct. Obama, like all other presidents, was put in power by moneyed interests. So that theorem is correct. It's irrefutable. So therefore, the moneyed interests are the issue, not Obama. So who are the moneyed interests? The very people who collapsed the economy in 08, sucked out trillions of dollars in profits, profits they paid no taxes on, so far as I can tell, and they're doing it right in front of our eyes in plain sight all over again, because the rules that kept these predators in check that were put in place after the last Great Depression of the 20s, you know, buying on margin with nothing down. That's what caused the first economic depression. People were able to buy with nothing down any stock they wanted, so they bought as much stock as they wanted to gamble on. And then when the stock ticked down, they lost it all. It didn't matter, though. They busted out the company by playing on the stocks without any real value in what they bought. It's the same all over again. That's why controls were put into the stock market, and it was those controls were eliminated by Bill Clinton. The Glass-Steagall Act was put in right after the Depression. Bill Clinton eliminated it so his friends from Martha's Vineyard could make trillions of dollars and fly him around on their airplanes. That's number one. Then the uptick rule, which prevented the vultures from doing the same thing in the market known as the hedge fund market. Those vultures eliminated the uptick rule under the watch of George Bush and the stupendous SEC chief, Chris, whatever his name is, whose name I forget. No one's ever asked him to testify before Congress except once for a brief moment.
the man who was sent in by Bush to watch the hawks, to watch the vultures, to keep him in check, let them peck the eyes out of the chickens in the coop. That means the middle class. And they're doing it again. So don't you quite understand how criminals work? I'm sorry to say it like it is. I don't care who the career criminal is, whether he's a petty burglar or a Wall Street crook. They only work, the same mindset. Let's put it to you that way. You ask a career criminal why they stop, and it's only when they get caught and they're put in the slammer that they stop. Then they usually find Jesus in order to get out early. Then the minute they get out, they burn the Bible and they go back to what they were doing before. Almost 100%, very, very, very high recidivism, because there are people who enjoy gaming the system and hurting others. You don't want to accept it because you were raised by Dr. Spock, and you think that every people are good. People are not good. People are evil. People are bad. And we got to understand is that the human race, the human species, if you want to get more specific, because the word race has another meaning today, the human species is an evil species. We are not good. We are bad. We are a bad species. God is scratching his head in heaven when he looks down at what we do every day, not only to others, but to ourselves. We are a genetic nightmare, but he's stuck with us. There's 6 billion of us on this planet. And God doesn't like his experiment very much. And he's just deciding when, not if. He's just deciding when that old comet might be thrown down from heaven right onto this planet again, creating a new Yucatan Peninsula. And wiping out life on Earth. If you want me to get cosmic and kind of metaphysical in how I see the world very, very bluntly in a very negative way. I must admit it to you. I'm not one of these guys who's like, you know, how to make friends and influence people. I'm not one of those blarney throwing false Republican double talkers who tell you we're all good. And if you only believe in the free market, everything will be well. I don't believe that for one second. Man is evil. There is larceny in the human heart. And there's very few people who would not commit larceny given the chance. Whether that is taking an extra packet of sugar for free from a restaurant. You heard what I just said? Taking that extra packet of sugar off a table. Or robbing an entire economy blind. So you got people at the top who are pirates who will rob the economy blind over and over and over again. And they're doing it right now. And they will do it until they're in jail in an orange jumpsuit. And then they'll figure out how to do it while they're in jail. Because that is the way the human being works, especially criminals. That's my view of it. So you go back again to Martha's Vineyard. This is where they meet. This is where those people who engineered the collapse of 08 have their homes or rent their homes or go to homes of those who did in the summertime. Summertime, summertime, some, summertime, some, summertime. And as I said to you, if there was a reporter left in the United States of America, a real investigative reporter who was not answering to someone high up, who was answering to somebody on the board of directors, who sits on many boards of directors, interlocking all the way up to the White House, because so few hands control so many corporations. See how many different boards the board members of General Electric sit on. Go and look at the board of General Electric and then see what other boards they sit on. And see if any of them overlap into the media. Well, of course they do. In fact, General Electric owns MSNBC, which is why the deviants are on that channel. Who don't see the, you know, hear no evil, do no evil, coming out of the White House. Why do you think they see no evil, hear no evil? And there is no speaking of evil about those in the White House from MSNBC, because they're wholly owned by General Electric, which is wholly owned by... Or shall I say the other way around the White House, in my estimation? This is, of course, all speculation of one man's opinion. So having said that, who is going to watch the watchers? Where is the SEC? The answer is they're shredding papers as we speak. A new story came out, which I put on michaelsavage.com, which you were shocked by. Someone blew the whistle on the Security Exchange. Oh, this is too much information for you. I'm going to stop. It's just too much already. It's Friday. Many of you are burnt. If you're listening to this show, you're not a normal person. If you are listening to this show, you're a disturbed human being. That's all I can say. If you are a normal person, you should be licking ice cream somewhere and taking an anti-cholesterol pill at the same time. Because that's the kind of schizophrenia that Americans are famous for. They go to a quack who puts them on an anti-cholesterol pill, and then the quack tells them, go and eat the same things you've been eating, just take the pill. And then the person does exactly the things that gave their father a heart attack. They eat the steak. They eat the potato. They eat the French fry. They eat the ice cream. They go to an Italian restaurant. They eat 19th century holiday food. They think they're eating Italian food. They're not. They're eating wedding food three times a day. They don't know why their arteries are clogged. They eat the tiramisu after the meal, not understanding it's poison for their body. Okay? I'm giving you an example. Don't get mad if you're in the tiramisu business. The wedding cake is not meant for an everyday night. Mmm, delicious. Gassed up on three glasses of wine in the restaurant, they get giddy already. They start to shriek and mixed in with the perfume. I run out of the restaurant. You put them on three glasses of wine already, cheap three wine coolers, and a tiramisu. I have to leave. It's like a merry-go-round in my head. I can't take it. Now, combine that with the smell of a teacher I had in the second grade, if you want to get into the psychology of it. Bad perfume mixed with three bad glasses of wine at tiramisu yields Barack Hussein Obama on Martha's Vineyard, minus the red-collar whites who voted for him. You don't know what I'm saying already, but I know what I'm saying. So you want me to do just economics? What do you want to do on Friday? Let's lighten it up. It's Rock and Roll Friday. I'm afraid the audience doesn't want to hear this. They want to hear that more government is good government, that higher unemployment, more unemployment payments are good for the economy. That's what this jerk Carney, where did they get this kid from? This child Carney, where did they get this Jay Carney from, White House press? What did he last do before this? A bumbler? I never saw anything like this in my life. The jerk the other day explained that unemployment insurance, quote, is one of the most direct ways to infuse money into the economy because people who are unemployed and obviously aren't earning a paycheck are going to spend the money that they get, and that creates growth and income for businesses that then leads them to making decisions about jobs and more hiring. Now, that's something only a professor at Berkeley could come up with, which is exactly who came up with it. The genius Professor Romer, possibly one of the stupidest economists in American history, which is why she was hired by Obama, gave him that line. It's unbelievable to me. It doesn't make any sense because more unemployed people do not create jobs. He's saying that the more unemployed people we can pay for not working, the more people will work. Who would believe that? Except a professor from the University of California at Berkeley. Jay Blarney worked for Time magazine. So there it is, 1-800-449. Are you listening to this show? Why do you listen to me on a Friday like this if it's August 19th and sane people are on vacation eating, licking ice cream cones and walking around with shorts on, hoping they don't inhale an amoeba while they jump into the river? Who swims in rivers anyway? I mean, you know, that's a secondary health story. It's very interesting to me. The poor girl who died in Florida in some swampy little pond there. I mean, you know, she inhaled water and died. The amoeba got into her brain. Then there was a case of a guy who did the Indian thing where you clean your sinuses with that, what's that cup called? It's disgusting. It looks like a little teapot. I get sick in a health food store when you see them. Some kind of jelly pot or whatever. They stick it in the nose with water. A neti pot. It's disgusting. It's a throwback idea. A guy tried to clean his sinuses out with well water and died within 3 days of an amoebal infection. You hear? That's the genius from the third world, how to clean your sinuses. There's a reason your municipalities put chlorine in the water, boys and girls. I know many of you whack jobs think that chlorinated water is bad for you, so you drink bottled water to get little doses of plastic. In other words, you think small, minute doses, microscopic doses of plastic are better for you than microscopic doses of chlorine. I would wage a bet that the opposite is true, and I'll wage a bet that there's going to be a study that comes out within the next 5 years which proves that plastic water is carcinogenic because, you know, that's a separate. So the thing is that the neti pot is somewhat not related to the economic story. It was to get your attention because nothing attracts attention better than disease. And since it's one of my areas of knowledge and we're all obsessed with illness, if you were a normal person, you would be doing what right now? You wouldn't be listening to the Savage Nation. You'd be on vacation, right? Let's say you'd be in Africa on a safari, which is as pathetic as it gets. Who in the world would go to Africa on a safari in a Land Rover and see a poor elephant or a giraffe? Why not go to the Bronx Zoo? What, are you crazy? Why are you going there? What is in Africa that you can't see in any zoo in America? A pathetic, poor animal. Leave it alone already. Stop imposing on its environment. Leave it alone. They're like the animal savers who tag the animals. I don't know what they do. Why are they tagging an animal with a thing in its ear? With radio-controlled emitting devices in the animal's ear. And they release it that the animal's perfectly happy after that. Let's say you're a wild animal and you're a male. And they tag a female of your species and release her into the wild with a slight radio-emitting device in her ear. Would you mate with her? Who would mate with a girl of your species or vice versa? Let's say the other way. They get a male, whatever, bear, and they tag his ear after doping him up, and then they release him. What girl would have anything to do with him with a radio-controlled device? They have they can hear higher frequencies than we can, but the schmuck people in the animal-saving business don't understand that, that they mark the animal like a leper with something on its ear. Nobody wants to mate with it again. What does that have to do with anything? Well, I'm getting to a point. You don't realize, boys and girls, this is actually a thought leading back to something. There was an article about Obama's reading in Martha's Vineyard. He actually went to a bookstore and he bought books. And the Drudge Report had the story. And the clerk said that these are the books he bought because he paid with a credit card. He pays for everything with your credit card. But in this case, he paid it with another credit card, whatever. And one of the books he bought was Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, which I thought was curious. I started thinking about it all day, because that's a book you usually read in high school. Now, why would a man as brilliant as Barack Hussein Obama, why would a man as genius and of such an advanced intelligence read Brave New World by Aldous Huxley? What would he find in that book as a grown man who was the most powerful man on earth? What in the world would he be looking at Brave New World for? And so I looked back into Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. And I have some pleasurable answers for you. And I'll begin by teasing you in clip one.
These are the incubators. And here is the week supply of ova at blood heat. Now here, we immerse the eggs into a warm bouillon containing free-swimming spermatozoa. Immersion continues until the eggs are all fertilized. Oh, and over here is where we bottle the alphas and betas. In short, gentlemen, the perfect process for manufacturing healthy babies.
I remember when I read this, the alpha, betas, and the gammas, it was fascinating to me how the alphas were the most discontent amongst those in Brave New World. Those who could still think were the most miserable in a society. The betas got along with most people. The deltas were the happiest. They took the menial jobs, and they thought that they were living in the best of all possible worlds. So if you voted for Obama, you're clearly an alpha who's scamming the system, or a delta who doesn't know any better. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'm so not in the mood for rock and roll. Could you not play any more today? I know it's Rock and Roll Friday, but to me it's Forever Tuesday today. I feel like Monday because I've been flying and I have teeth. So Obama bought Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, according to the clerk up in the Grapes of Wrath, where he's staying. And I was reading, I have a copy here. I've had it since I'm a, you know, and they have like, everyone belongs to everybody. Promiscuity is everyone's duty. History is bunk. Most historical facts are unpleasant. These were the slogans put out by the government to keep people in check. And the children were made in incubators by the state. Parents were no longer allowed to make babies. And then there's a scene in there in Brave New World where they're conditioning babies into becoming alphas, betas, gammas, and deltas. As I said to you, the alphas, who they were required for various and sundry higher end thinking for the state, they were the most unhappy. The betas were sort of content people, like an average salesman in America, the good time Charlie, the golfer, in other words. The gamma was very happy, and the delta was the happiest. He said he lived in a great world. You see what I'm saying? So in one of those scenes, they're talking about in this factory where the babies are made in Brave New World and how they're shocking, using electric shocks on babies, little mild electric shocks, as they're crawling towards pictures of landscapes and flowers. And that's to show them that they will never like books and botany all their lives. They'll grow up with what the psychologists used to call an instinctive hatred of books and flowers, reflexes unalterably conditioned. They'll be safe from books and botany, said the director, all their lives. Take them away again. So they would associate books and loud noises, flowers and electric shocks, as they condition the babies, the little infants that they made in test tubes, so to speak, or incubators. I found it interesting that he talked about books and botany, because I've spent my whole life reading books and pursuing botany. I'm very counterintuitive in that regard. So in another line of Brave New World, which the president is reading, they turn to each other, the scientists who are making the babies wherever they make. And he says, "For you must remember that in those days of gross viviparous reproduction, children were always brought up by their parents and not in state conditioning centers." Now, of course, we have state conditioning centers today called schools. The National Educational Association is the state conditioning center. And we had a teacher, 22 years of distinguished service, who wrote on his own Facebook account that he opposed gay marriage for moral reasons. He was fired in one of the states. It's on my website. I was shocked by that. The man on his own website sent a note saying he opposed gay marriage because it was immoral. A man of 22 years, distinguished career, was fired from a school district. I hope he sues and wins $100 million for what they're doing to him. It doesn't matter whether you're for or against gay marriage. What matters is that this man was exercising free speech in the United States of America, and his First Amendment rights were stolen from him by these Nazis in the school who did this to him. And if you think that we're not on the road to state conditioning centers, you are mistaken. Now, I don't say that that's why Obama's reading the book. I don't think he's reading Brave New World because he wants to establish state conditioning centers. He already has state conditioning centers. They're called ABC, CBS, NBC. Every local news channel, every newspaper is a state conditioning center.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The big bopper in the White House, he's enjoying his vacation today, as anyone would expect a president to do in late August. After all, it's been a rough couple of weeks for him. Using a netty is like, you know, I was talking about a lot of things in the last hour. It's very hard for me to summarize it in three phrases. I think the most interesting, from my point of view, is that one of the books the president allegedly bought on Martha's Vineyard for his summer reading is Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. At least it's a step above George Bush in that regard, in that George Bush read only magazines, they said, golfing magazines and things like that. It's okay. Most people don't read books anymore. I understand that. Books are part of the past. Oh, yes, books are old media. Books are old media. By the way, my book, I have to plug it. I have to tell you, Abuse of Power is coming out in a few weeks. It's unbelievable what I'm getting from people who are reading it, review copies, like my most brilliant friend. Okay, I have one brilliant friend. Everyone else is not in that category. Jack Sarfati, Dr. Sarfati, I hope he's not mad. He got a review copy. He's raving about it. He said, "I haven't read a book in years. I never read novels." He said, "How'd you do this? How could you write a book like this? Where'd you do it? When did you do it? How'd you do it?" So it's there, and I hope you enjoy reading it. You can buy it on Amazon or wherever. It's not in a bookstore yet. And so Obama did not buy a copy of Abuse of Power because it's not yet available, nor did he ask for a review copy. But I expect that by now because, as you know, the former First Lady Laura Bush was a brilliant woman, very into the library shtick. And she used to have all sorts of readings. And although I was a best-selling author all through the 8 years that Bush was running the country, and they were all very conservative books, she never acknowledged one of my books. Go figure. But I found the reason why in Brave New World, because the young men are talking while they're on a retreat up in the plateau. They're doing a kind of visionary retreat in Brave New World. And one young man says to the other, "Yes, that's just it." The young man nodded. "If one's different, one's bound to be lonely. They're beastly to one who is different. They're beastly. If one's different, one's bound to be lonely." I thought that was interesting. I'm glad I'm different and lonely. Hug me till you drug me, honey. Hug me till you drug me, honey, to the warm draft of verbena that came blowing through the ventilator above her head. This is from page 205 of Brave New World. I don't know what Obama's finding in this book. He's certainly not going to set up, birthing clinics. We already have them in most cities in San Francisco for the illegal aliens so they can knock out the babies so they can become instant citizens. I mean, we have birthing clinics here already. What do you need incubators for? We have incubators. The incubator is not a citizen, but what the incubator creates is a citizen. That's what... "A gram is better than a dam," said Lenina mechanically from behind her hands. "I wish I had my soma. A gram is better than a dam." Are we that far behind Brave New World, where most of the society is drug, legal or illegally? Does it really matter whether you're on a legal drug that your quack doctor puts you on, or an illegal drug? Does it really matter whether your gram is legal or illegal? You're a drug addict. A gram is better than a dam," said Lenina mechanically from behind her hands. "I wish I had my soma." So what is the difference if we are already a drugged society? A gram is better than a dam. Does it matter whether it's a gram of coke or a gram of a few milligrams of whatever your doctor quack puts you on, telling you you'll feel better? You're a drug addict. One way or the other, you're a druggie. That's all. Don't look down upon people using illicit drugs. So they don't go to a quack and get a prescription for it. All right, let me take some calls now because I can't see anything. How do you feel right now on a Friday afternoon listening to me? On the East Coast, it's already 10 after 7. On the West Coast, it's only 10 after 4, at least I have a night ahead of me. I was broadcasting from the East for the rest of the week, except the day I was out for the teeth and the flying. It's a weird thing broadcasting later than it is on the West Coast. I like the afternoons better. I'm a kind of guy, my peak is the afternoon. You know that even in college, I always did better in the afternoons and the afternoon courses. I'm not a morning guy. I could never do morning radio. I don't know how anyone thinks in the morning. I actually could do a show in the morning, but I wouldn't enjoy it. I'm up at 6:30 at dawn. Light comes up. Even if the curtains are closed, I awake. I'm on the cycle. I'm like a natural man. I'm the savage in Brave New World. Incidentally, that's where the word savage came from. People say, "How'd you get your name?" Well, read Brave New World. There's a savage in Brave New World who opposes the system, incidentally. May as well be that, right? Some say it's from Charles Savage. Others say it's from the savage in Brave New World. But in either case, the savage in Aldous Huxley's Brave New World is the outcast. He's one of the last free men in the society, and he has to go into hiding. Let's pray that life doesn't imitate art. Nevertheless, as I say, do like afternoons much better than mornings. Although I will tell you this. So I get up at dawn. I could have a newspaper delivered to me in my hand. Within 5 minutes, I could do a radio show for one straight hour. Before I open my eyes, you give me a coffee and a newspaper, I could do the most dynamic morning radio show in America for 1 hour, period, 1 hour. Then come back in the afternoon for the rest of the show. See, like, here's the update from what I started this morning. I'm thinking of working 20 hours a day in the future. Because like Rodin the sculptor, who's my favorite sculptor, he once wrote in his journal, "Work is the only salvation." Which for me is the truth. I don't like people. I really have come to the point where I really don't. I'm sorry. I don't want you to think I don't like you personally. I find people to be horrible. The older I get, the more I realize people are petty, greedy, and mean. They only want what's good, what they can take from you. I don't care who they are. They're only out to get from me. Maybe, you know, Karl Marx is funny. When I was a young idealist, I read everybody. I read Karl Marx, and I'll never forget what Karl Marx wrote. He wrote that in a bourgeois society, use is the only currency. People use each other. There is no love in man's heart in a bourgeois capitalist society. Now, if a youngster reads that, he says, yeah, that's true. Well, he doesn't realize the communists abuse each other the same way. You think the communists don't use and abuse each other to step on each other's fingers and break the other guy's fingers and step ahead inside the bureaucracy? See, but a kid doesn't know that. So a kid reads Karl Marx and he says, yes, in a bourgeois society, There is no love between man. There is no kindness between man. There is only use between man in a bourgeois capitalist society. So Kit says, wow, man, I want to live in that. I want to live in a world where everyone loves each other. Let's all get along. Let's all just do the samba together, you know. Let's all go down to Brazil and have sex change operations, and we can samba off into the, and the government will take care of us. But that's a child's view of the world. Does anyone follow me? Do you see how my mind works? I mean, you have to understand the show. If you just tune in for the first time, you don't understand what I'm talking about. Stream of consciousness is dead. It's a dead art. I didn't invent it. The Bible was the original stream of consciousness. Did you realize that? I studied this once. The original stream of consciousness in the written word was the Bible. You read, like, let's say, Ezekiel or any of those fellas. It's like rambling thoughts. The olive tree and the vulture flew down. And it's stream of consciousness. Whatever came into the guy's head, he wrote down. So you could say revelations. I don't know, maybe it was revelations. I'm not so sure it was revelations. They were the poets of that day. Guy ran around, all right, here's what I see. They're selling over, and they're trading money. I don't like it. I don't like the leather that John makes. So he goes out in the desert and starts bumbling around and write it down. I heard God tell me, all right, I'll buy it. What the heck? All right, let me take a copy of that. I'll see. Oh, it's not bad. All right, we shouldn't do that. I'll take another copy. Before long, he was a prophet. Why? Well, I don't know, man. Look at the stuff he said. Yeah, he was a prophet. Well, how'd he get it? Do you think he made it up? No, God told it to him. God told it to him right underneath that burning bush. God came down, and God, as you well know, is a minuscule creature. And he spoke to him from beneath the burning bush, and he said, you write that down, and you'll have a bestseller, Ezekiel. Well, whatever it is, I mean, all it is a stream of consciousness. Now, jump cut forward. Can anyone listening to this show, I want to see the literacy level of this audience. I don't care whether you're in a jailhouse or you never went past the sixth grade. It doesn't matter whether you have the education of Glenn Beck or Albert Einstein from the Alpha or the Omega. Who was it? Who was the Irish writer? What? Who was the Irish writer? Who was the Irish writer who wrote Stream of Consciousness? Anyone who gets that right will win a free copy of Abuse of Power. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Obama is granting amnesty to millions of illegal aliens under the guise of being kind and compassionate, but you know it's a cynical move. Remember I said to you, everything is in self-interest. And of course, the worst man in the history of the U.S. Senate, Richard Durbin, has been trying to push this sham upon the American people for 10 straight years, the so-called Dream Act. And since everyone in America is opposed to it except the gangsters in the Democrat Party, and, of course, the Latino pressure groups like La Raza, the race, they couldn't pass it. So what Obama did before going away to Martha's Vineyard is saying, good, now I'm going to pass it anyway. He's granting backdoor amnesty to illegal immigrants. Instead of enforcing immigration laws, he's teaching Napolitano how to get around them. To me, it's an impeachable offense, and I think there should be impeachment hearings begun immediately. And frankly, although... Well, remember what impeachment is for, crimes and misdemeanors. This is a crime. He is aiding and abetting criminals, period, end of story. You've been looking for an excuse to impeach Obama. You've got it with this act. There's no reason for this other than to grant amnesty to tens of thousands or millions of people in time for the election. It's so clear that you don't have to have more than an IQ of 105 to understand this. The fact of the matter is, experts are estimating that more than 2 million people might be eligible to apply for legal status under the so-called Dream Act. While the lying Mr. Durbin, his office, Mr. Durbin the liar, estimates that 100,000 to 200,000 illegal aliens could earn citizenship, though the numbers are uncertain. So Janet Napolitano, in cahoots with Obama, are committing an act that is illegal, unconstitutional, and impeachable. I cannot believe what I'm looking at. I just can't believe this is going on in plain sight. You say, well, okay, if you started impeachment hearings, he wouldn't get impeached for this. And by the time he was impeached, he'd be out of office. That's irrelevant. when Congress returns, the first duty that they have is to start impeachment hearings against Obama for this new policy, because it will expose him and Durbin and the entire rotten apparatus of the Democrat Party for what they are. It's a criminal enterprise. I can say much more. However, it will fall on deaf ears because the Republicans are on vacation, and my guess is they are also involved in this because they also are in on this game. So let's take some calls on some of the topics I raised before, whether it be Brave New World, Stream of Consciousness, or Using a Netty. WOR New York City. Dan, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
That would be Tristram Shandy, Uncle Mike.
Well, hold it. We got to tell the audience what I asked. I asked whoever can name the great Irish author and his book, which was the first great example of stream of consciousness in literature since the Bible, would win a free copy of Abuse of Power. So who's the author?
Lawrence Stern.
Not to be confused with Golan and Globus. Lawrence Stern was Irish, 1750, and his book was called Tristram Shandy. Explain to the audience two things. How did you know this, number one, and who was Tristram Shandy?
I learned it through the Savage University.
Oh, I talked about this about 4 years ago, and you remember that. That's amazing. And B, I'm sorry, I can't hear you at all. Go ahead.
I'm on the turnpike. It's horrible weather. I just know the reference from listening to your show religiously.
That's amazing. Well, you win a free copy of my new novel, Abuse of Power. How do you like that? Is that good news?
That's excellent news.
All right, stay on the line. And guys, let's start. That's the first free book I'm giving out in the cycle. I'm going to give out over 200 free books between now and mid-September. I'm going to ramp it up after Labor Day, but I didn't intend to do this. I just had to do it right now because I'm so proud of my new novel, and I think it's a very important novel in that it discloses certain things in fiction that I dare not say in nonfiction. Ooh, 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 ah. E-E-ah-ah. Yeah. So what should we do now that we covered Tristram Shandy? Stream of consciousness means that you... Well, I don't want to explain it. It's not a classroom. Okay, it's a radio show. What's the point? What else do we have for you today? The bottling room in Brave New World. Embryos are predestined and preconditioned to make happy people. Play clip 5 from Brave New World, the movie.
One by one, the eggs are transferred from their test tubes into these larger decanters and moved along to the labelers. Carefully labeled as to heredity, date of fertilization, sex, name, serial number. Now, here is where we actually predestine and condition. Nothing is so unstabilizing to society as unhappy people. We avoid all that by preconditioning our embryos.
Well, at least we know where they were born. I mean, that's the one good thing about this, is that when you make them in a factory, you can time date them and stamp them and, you know, Dayton, Ohio, a certain date. And he said, nothing makes a society more unstable than unhappy people. Oh, yeah, that's true. It's always the discontent who makes society a little upset. And it's also the discontent who are the best musicians, the best poets, the best artists, the best scientists, the best and most creative people are the most discontent because that's why they're doing it. So you have to understand that discontent is the most important thing in human civilization is discontent. And when you try to medicate discontent, see, the minute you declare discontent or unhappiness an illness, that's the end of a civilization. Which is why you're being gulled by the medical profession. If they're telling you, oh, yeah, take this pill and you won't feel that. Take that pill and you won't feel this. What they're doing is killing you and your child. All your creativity that you would normally put into something, whether it be a business or an invention, is being muted by that drug put out by the drug company. But again, I feel like I'm just shouting into a hollow box. I think the world is over. I don't think anyone hears anything
Savage.
Anymore.
And here we have the bottling room. Little embryos carefully bottled being rocked gently to and fro as they did in olden days when carried by their mothers. Now, boys, you must learn to distinguish between smut and science. I'm going to use that word again. As scientists of tomorrow, you must learn to cope with it. Mother.
Oh.
That's better. As a matter of fact, there is an area in our world where humans are still viviparous, still give birth to their children. The Savage Reservation in New Mexico. I visited there once myself, many years ago. Dreadful, filthy place. Naturally, civilization has improved on all that.
Mother was a dirty word in the brave new world. Now, let's go to Obama for a moment. Let's talk about Obama and social policy. When have you last heard Obama say something positive about the nuclear family of man plus woman plus children? I realize he himself represents the nuclear family, but has he ever overtly supported the basis of our civilization, the brick of civilization, the nuclear family? I haven't heard it. When have you last heard a social policy from a Republican that supports family values? I'm using almost a dirty word right now. This was big during the Reagan era. The word family values, the words family values are the equivalent of the word mother in Brave New World today. You'd be laughed off the stage if you even mentioned it. And yet a society cannot survive without leadership that supports the brick of civilization, which is the family. Family. The eternal family. The eternal family. I don't hear, I don't see it. I turn the television on, it's getting worse every day. I don't want to go into a lament on the degeneracy, the reality shows of every dirtbag on the planet. I'm not jealous. I would never do it. They could offer me $1 million a segment. I wouldn't do it. I would never want a camera in my house. You'd want a camera in your house? Why would anyone want that if they're not psychotic or a drug addict? All right, if you're a prostitute, I could understand that it's easier than hooking in the street if you'd want a camera in your toilet. The real housewives of this, the real housewives of that, the real housewife of this, the real low life of that. The real low-lifes of the housewives of the no-lifes, the real no-lifes of the housewives. What kind of world are we living in where anybody would find that entertaining to see these grotesque women marching around? What child could come out of a family like that and be sane? Can a child come out of a home like that and be sound? The child's going to be a drug addict. The majority of children from the real housewives of this will be a drug addict or a psycho in one way or the other. It's impossible for a child to come out of that sane. First of all, the child thinks that they're special just because this is a jerk rolling around with a camera in the living room. What makes them special is that their mother is a degenerate psychotic, that she would even invite cameras into a house and violate the privacy of her own family just for a moment of fame. That's the truth of this situation. I realize I'm rambling right now, but it's the Savage sermon on Friday. I'm giving you the sermon. But what I started by telling you is that you see a president like this, who is so overtly breaking the law. Case in point, backdoor amnesty for illegal aliens, DREAM Act, which Dick Durbin couldn't get through Congress for 10 years, doing it with the stroke of a pen. He's committing a felony, violating the law in plain sight, and the Republicans are out to lunch on vacation, licking ice cream, taking Prozac, and walking around in Bermuda shorts, and canoeing and sucking amoeba in with neti cups all at once. Where are the Republicans? What, are they whacked out on neti cups? What, somebody put too much chamomile in the Republican neti cups? They should come back from vacation and immediately indict Obama for an impeachable offense. And stop it now. Stop this disease, this cyclone that is about to hit this republic, which is amnesty for millions of illegal aliens, which will put this shyster back in power again. Unless he is stopped, we will have Chavez in this country. And again, I'm talking to myself. I can feel it. I have a sixth sense. Where is the Republican Party? They should come back from vacation, put down their golf clubs, and say we're impeaching Obama for the DREAM Act. It would stop it like that. Because even if they could not get the votes to impeach him, they would wake up the average schmuck to what Obama is doing, the illegality of it. You're not going to tell me that the black American is in favor of amnesty for illegal alien, are you? You're not going to tell me that the average white guy is in favor of amnesty for illegal aliens, are you? It would wake those idiots up to the gang that is running this country. And at the end of it, they might put Dick Durbin in prison for what he's doing here. He's only pandering to La Raza and the Hispanic pressure groups. And he's in doing so, he's usurping the U.S. Constitution. He's violating the rule of law. And if we are no longer a nation of laws, then what are we? Tell me. You voted on amnesty for illegal aliens because Dick Durbin wanted to do it? That makes it okay? It's not okay. It's illegal. It's a crime, as a matter of fact. It's only not even a debate. It's a crime. If the people don't vote for it, you can't pass it. This is called a representative democracy. Do you understand what the government is that we have here? The people voted against illegal aliens. Every time they were allowed to vote on it, they said no to amnesty for illegal aliens. The lifeboat is full. No, they said no. So Durbin and Obama conspired that before he dashes off to his vacation, he will grant amnesty, backdoor amnesty through this act. With the stroke of a pen. Illegal, impeachable, start the impeachment proceedings and expose Obama for what he is. And I guarantee you that will bring down the Democrat Party for good. The blacks do not want amnesty for illegals. The blue-collar white who was connived into voting for Obama will not vote for him again. And that will be the end of the socialist experiment in America as sure as I'm sitting here. But where are the Republican ice cream lickers when we need them? Tell me where they are. And on that note, I'm going to rest my case. I'm Clarence Darrow for the Defense of the American Way. And I'm resting my case. You decide. I gave you my viewpoint. So let's start with the callers across America. I'm going to start at the top and work my way right down to the bottom. So let's start in New York on the East Coast. WOR in New York. Tom, go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Hello. You're being disingenuous in expecting that you would have normal listeners as an audience.
Yeah, no, I said anyone listening to this show is not normal.
Yeah, but that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. We need more
people to
dissociate from what they think everyone else thinks is normal.
That's right. That's why I'm talking about Brave New World. If you're discontent, it's because you think. And if you think, you can see the gangster, what he's doing.
I spotted it pretty quickly, as a matter of fact. And like you, I was...
Am I wrong in saying that by granting a backdoor amnesty to illegal aliens by passing the DREAM Act without a vote, he has committed an impeachable offense? Do you agree with me?
Absolutely. But so what? It's not going to happen. You know, you're a good example for a curmudgeon, an aspiring curmudgeon. To realistically expect that would happen is beyond the pale. Not yet. We're not in bad enough condition.
Well, I don't know about curmudgeon. I do know this. If the Tea Party started to really bang on their teapots and demand impeachment for amnesty for illegals, it would happen. If everywhere one of these Republican frauds got up at a local town hall meeting and they stopped yattering about the economy as if they can do something about it, which they can't, by the way, these little lowlifes can't do anything about the economy. Only the businessmen could do something about it. But if every Tea Party member understood that you can impeach Obama and Dick Durbin and Janet Napolitano, and you could have them probably arrested for what they're doing, by demanding an immediate impeachment hearing, it would happen. It's still a nation of the people, by the people, and for the people. It's not a nation of what you may think it is. All right, I said my piece. It's enough already. We've been sold out, as we well know, by both parties. That we know. That doesn't mean that it's over. It doesn't mean the act is over yet. We have not yet become... we have not yet descended to Chavez's vision for a perfect society. We have not yet devolved into the ex-Soviet Union, although we are on the road to it. Every experiment that was tried by the communists in Eastern Europe and thrown out as failed, Obama is enacting in America as though it's fresh and new and not yet tried properly. And that is because of the university morons who are overly populated in this administration. The university morons who have been professing their stupidity in the ivory towers of America for the last 30 years have finally been given absolute power, and they're enacting all of their dream plans. And look at this country and look at the world today. The world is burning. The economy is melting down, all because the university morons, if you want to put a benign look upon it, you could say, oh, they meant well. Well, the road to you nowhere is paved with good intentions. Yes, of course, Jimmy Carter and Brzezinski meant well by overthrowing Mubarak and encouraging the Muslim Brotherhood. Oh, they meant well. Oh, they didn't mean for Egypt to go to war with Israel. although it's happening and it's liable to explode, God forbid, into a world war, they didn't mean for it to happen. Brzezinski just wanted the Egyptian people to be free of the oppression of Mubarak. That's all Hillary Clinton and Susan Rice and Brzezinski and Carter. They didn't mean for this to happen. And the Keynesian economics that we are witnessing, where they say more unemployment yields a better economy, more people on unemployment insurance stimulates the economy, they have no idea what they're talking about because they've been collecting tenure for the last 40 years and then dashing off to Vermont on their medical marijuana. Their medical marijuana, they don't know what the heck they're talking about. I knew these people. I know these people. I know how they think. They're stupid. Only an overeducated idiot on tenure who's never really produced a product or a service that anybody needs could come up with these things. But again, I don't mean to go on with my sermon because I've said all I can possibly say. Let's take the callers. We went from the East Coast on the Savage Nation. We now go to Sacramento. Phil from KSTE Country, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, sir. Let me just first say that you are the smartest, most intelligent person on talk radio. And
I couldn't disagree with you because it would be disingenuous of me to do so. I don't think I'm the smartest. I do believe I'm the most educated person in conservative talk radio. I think there are people who have very high IQs in the business. They just don't have the background, which when hitched to their native intelligence. In other words, it's okay to have a very high IQ and a native intelligence. But in other words, if you don't have that hitch to an education, you're not going to make the same, let's say, impact upon people. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, well, proof of that is that I had original talking points, which you've already explained very well, which are that the socialism and Obama and Reid and Pelosi, we all know what's going on. And then you've got the old school Republicans that are just going to fall in line. But then you've got, I've thought of a thousand things while on hold. And let me just give you a little story. I used to sit on my grandfather's lap, and he used to tell me, he said, some things are going to get so bad in this country that the people are going to get up and revolt. And I always believed it or was expecting it and expected it to happen. And through what they've done, the people have lost their will. Some of the people have lost.
I disagree with your grandfather, and no disrespect intended. I've studied revolution since I'm 17 years old. People only revolt when they're hungry. They will not revolt for any other reason. And as long as they're fat and happy and there's government cheese, they're never going to revolt. And I'm telling you the way it is. There's no hunger in this country. There's obese people for a reason. And the reason is to keep them fat and happy. I'm telling you the way it is. You only have revolutions where there's hunger. There is no hunger in America. Thank you for the call, and thank you for the compliments as well. Austin, Texas. Kevin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, I have a question for you, and also I have a bone to pick with you. I've been listening to you for a number of years now, and I started listening to you in my formative years when I was entering manhood in my early 20s, and I look at you like a father figure, so to speak. I listen to you every single day, and I want to give you a brief example of why, among other reasons, I look at you this way. You referenced a couple of days ago when you were at your son's house, and he said to you, thank you for teaching me certain things about why smoking and drinking is bad. And you gave him a cigarette and he almost vomited, and you gave him a shot of whiskey and he almost threw up. And metaphorically speaking, to put the analogy together, you're giving me a shot of perspective, not to have anything against my own father, but you're giving me a shot of reality of what happens to a society and a culture when liberalism becomes an epidemic. And yes. My question to you is because over the years I've listened to you, and this is going to become a part of my mentality because of you, I realize emotionally that you're like a father figure, but intellectually I realize you're nothing but a man in a box. You're not tangible. You're not real. I can't visit you when I'm in San Francisco. I can't email you when I want. I can't pick up the phone. And then I think to myself, why am I listening? What's it for? Is it worth it? And I'm conflicted in this way. But I can't stop myself from listening because I keep learning. But
So where's the criticism? I don't understand it. You want to have a drink with me? I don't do that with listeners.
No, I understand that very much, but the problem is you—it's like
you. You mean, do you think I should do live appearances across America so I look more real? I'm more real to people.
Maybe so. I saw a video.
I don't know. Maybe that's why some of the con men do it, to make you feel that they love you. All of the road shows that they give you. Look, let me put it this way: I'm a loner to begin with. I don't travel very much. I just traveled. I hated it. I don't like traveling anywhere. It doesn't matter where I go. I don't like it. I only like my own home, my own place. Isn't the radio enough that I give you like an entertaining and educational and education and some entertainment on the radio? I mean, what is it? You want to reach out and be real with me?
No, I don't mean I want to cross any type of line or anything of this nature, but
No. I don't mean that in any derogatory sense. What is it that I'm not doing for you that you want done? I mean, you want a more tangible relationship with a talk show host.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. I think because you're so good at what you do, the differentiator is you don't just spout out talking points. You allow me into your life and so forth, so I feel as though I know you. But I don't, and it has a psychological effect. Now, I think, too,
wait a minute. This is phenomenal. I never had a call like this in my life. This is astounding. Let me take a quick commercial break, and I'll come back with some kind of answer.
Savage.
All right, welcome back to the Savage Nation. Let's quickly turn back to Kevin in Austin. Kevin, so what's your final point?
Well, my final point is this. I think it was more of a question for you. I just feel as though you've had an impactful, emotional impact on me throughout the years, not only given my political perception.
Kevin, let me ask you. You started listening when you were young. How old are you now?
I'm 26 years old. I started listening when I was around 19.
And who turned you on to the show, your father?
It was actually my mother. My mother said that there's a man on the radio. He speaks mainly about politics, but he was describing a dream he had. And he correlated the dream into what the general point he was making. And I said, that sounds interesting. So I tuned in the next day.
And how is your life, basically? Is it decent? Is it going well for you, or what?
My life is terrific. I have a very I'm not a normal person by any means that you describe a normal person as. But
I know I was pulling, but I mean, you have a job and all of that. You're doing okay.
Yes, I have a job. I work. I do everything I can to.
Would you ascribe your reasonable success in life to your value system?
Yes, absolutely. Which was by and large implemented by you. That's my point.
All right. So what you're saying is because I was a tough father in that way, you turned out okay, and you feel that had I not been an influence in your life, you might have wound up kind of a slacker.
That's 100% correct. I worked my way up. I'm void of a college education, which I'm at.
Well, you don't need a college education. The people I know who've gotten the farthest in life either went to very poor community colleges or never graduated at all. I don't have a lot of time right now, but I'm going to send you a free copy of my new novel. I really hope to God you get it. It'll be out very soon, Abuse of Power. You're going to love it. If you're one of my fans, you're going to love this book, and I want you to have a free copy from me. That's all I can do for you for being such a loyal listener all these years. It's hard to believe I have this much influence. But as soon as I come back from this break, we have another big hour right here on the Savage Nation. Don't miss it. MichaelSavage.com.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We'll be right back. Obama is on vacation. Thousands are lining up for jobs. Today we heard from Leon Panetta that the U.S. military will stay in Iraq into 2012. We learned today that Obama, while rushing off on vacation, has granted a limited amnesty to illegal aliens, which I'm the only one in the media to have predicted he would do in order to win the election in 2012 with the votes of the illegal Hispanics. Obama is reading in Martha's Vineyard. He went to a bookstore. One of the books he bought is Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, which we all read in college. You have to ask yourself, what is he finding in Brave New World as an adult petty dictator of any interest? It's an interesting question. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What you may not know is that Rahm Emanuel is saying that Chicago now desperately needs cash from casinos. And take a guess who's going to build the casinos in Chicago. Does anyone know listening to the Savage Nation? Well, I think that you may be shocked to find out that there will be casinos built there. And I'm hearing that it could be Donald Trump building the casinos. Strange, isn't it? How politics works. Well, what the heck? You didn't actually think that there was a serious candidacy there, did you? Or did you? Never can tell what people are doing things for. On MichaelSavage.com, we learned that the SEC, the Security Exchange Commission, which is supposed to be the watchdog of Wall Street, destroyed thousands of files related to the meltdown, Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, Bernie Madoff, and others. Has anyone gone to jail? No. Journalism, terrorism, patriotism. How far up does the abuse of power reach? You can read a free excerpt of my new novel by going to michaelsavage.com and downloading the chapter for free. In the Middle East, your heart could break. There it is again. There it is all over again, through the Sinai this time. Jihadists came through Egypt, through the Sinai desert, killed 8 in Israel. You haven't read anything again about it because Israel let its guard down with the fact of the matter is the Palestinians were armed by the United States and trained by the EU and the United States. 1-800-449-8255. History of Martha's Vineyard is on my website. Many, many other stories you shouldn't miss, including, and this is sickening, 10-year-old model's mom defends racy pictures. Teacher suspended for anti-gay marriage posts. On his own Facebook account, he was the teacher of the year, 22 years of loyal service, opposes gay marriage, and they fired him. Isn't America great? The land of the free and the home of the brave? Hey, if you think that's bad, how about identity theft? What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now, 1-800-LOCK-485, and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call now. Take a look at Obama. Man, that guy, he aged 10 years in the last few months. I don't know what it is. Maybe all the golf or something. There could be toxins in the golf course while he's aging. Let's hope not. I mean, something in the grass. Something, I don't know what it is, bad diet, something. Stress, he never thought it would be this hard. I mean, till now, the skids were greased by the controllers from the KG. But, everything was skidded and greased and go for nothing, the Punaho, and don't worry, we'll bury your records. And now, he's a guy. Look, you look at the history books, and you see when Hitler came to power, what they were saying with dictatorship. And I have to use the example, not because Obama's like Hitler, don't get me wrong, but listen, here's what a dictator says. Ein Volk, Ein Reich, Ein Führer, meaning one person, one people, one nation, one leader, right? Ein Volk, one people, Ein Reich, I think, one nation, one government, not government, and then ruler, one leader, one dictator. And then they were saying things like Hitler is Germany and Germany is Hitler. Hitler is Germany, Germany is Hitler. They're brainwashing the people into accepting the absolutism of Hitler. Now, you see the same thing today in Syria where Assad, the pinhead, and I use that phrase because he looks like that family always had a microcephalic look, incidentally. The man is machine gunning his own citizens in Syria and the world does nothing. Nothing. Zero. It's that Israel they talk about because a Palestinian broke a hangnail throwing hand grenades into a nursery. But here you've got Assad machine gunning his own people, and the world does nothing. Admittedly, Turkey's massing troops on the border with Syria, and they may invade because they're not going to sit idly by because it could have blowback for them. But the point I'm making is, you go back to the bigger picture, Ein Volk, Ein Reich, Ein Führer, right? Of course presidents would like to have absolute power. Not just Obama the Marxist. Bush would have liked it. LBJ would have liked it. You name the president, they all would have liked to have absolute power. And the genius of our founders, though I have to repeat it for you again, was that we absolutely didn't want absolutism. And so the founding fathers set up a split government. Two parties came along later, but they set up a split government, balance of powers, right? Separation of powers. And that was set up so that no one man or no one group could take over the country. That's why we seem to think that Congress is crippled. That's actually a good sign. It's supposed to be crippled. In a dictatorship, the budget would have been resolved overnight. Ein Führer would have written the budget. That's all. If you didn't like it, he put you in a gas chamber. So the fact that they're fighting over taxes and they're fighting over so-called, whatever they call Social Security and Medicaid and welfare. What do they call it now? Entitlements. I love the word entitlements. I'd give them an entitlement, the bums. Half the immigrants who sneak into this country don't work. They sit at home and blow dope day and night and drink beer in their hovels, and then they hate America on the side. Don't tell me what goes on, man. I'm no fool. I don't read the propaganda. They sit here in these houses here all over the country, sitting around blowing dope and drinking beer and cursing America. They tell me about immigration. They're not my father, okay? They're not my grandfather. They're not your grandfather. Don't tell me they're all the same. Don't give me that rubbish. I've been around the block a few times, and I've been around the nation a few decades. You know what I'm saying? Don't give me the garbage. They're all the same. So anyway, of course he'd like to give them more welfare and more bennies. Why does he? Because more votes. That's all. That's what a dictator would like to do, but he can't do it. So that's why he's turning gray. He's finding out finally that although the skids were greased for him since childhood, now all of a sudden he has to actually dealing with things. He has to negotiate. He's not used to it. He's used to dictating and getting his way, or at least doing what people wanted done and getting it done for them, whichever way you want to look. So he's turning gray because it's very hard to reach that point where you realize you're no longer in total charge, which is the way it should be in a democracy, a relative republic like ours. Democracy, call it what you want. I don't even like the word democracy, but okay, that's what they call it. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I mean, I don't know if I want to talk about this anymore. You know what I did want to talk about is how the liberals, the illiberal liberals, are blasting Romney because he's a Mormon. That really got me angry. I'm not a Mormon. Let me be very clear. But for Newsweek to make Romney's religion a big issue got me very upset. I don't like it. And I think it's something that's so un-American, it's unbelievable. Now, I would expect this from the Vermin at Newsweek, since it's a failing magazine, since they're basically out of business. But for them to attack Mormonism and Romney for being a Mormon, basically, in a they're doing it in an offhanded way, the way they always do things, is sickening. Why don't they attack Catholics for being in the Congress? Well, because that's not an issue. Why don't they attack how many Jews there are in Congress? Well, that's not an issue. How come they've never done an expose on Muslims in Congress? They wouldn't dare. But Mormons, no problem. It says they've conquered Broadway, talk radio, the U.S. Senate, and they may win the White House. Why Mitt Romney and 6 million Mormons have the secret to success. Walter Kern, go to hell in Newsweek. Your whole magazine should go to hell as far as I'm concerned. You are a despicable outfit to make Mr. Romney's religion the issue. That's all I have to say about you're a despicable group of people, and I'm not a Mormon. Why don't you show your nerve and talk about the Muslims in Congress? or even show bigger nerve and talk about the Jews in Congress. Go ahead, see what happens to you then. Open up your big mouth in Newsweek and say, oh, look at this. They've conquered Wall Street, the media, and Congress. Fort Lauderdale, Matt. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hey, Dr. Savage. I was wondering if I could ask you a life coach question.
You know, that's what I want to do today, life coach. I'm so bored of the news. All right, I'll be Dr. Savage, life coach. Question, please.
Should I get a PhD in molecular biology, or should I go get a medical doctorate degree in medical school?
Are you a white male?
Yes.
Okay. Well, a white male need not apply for any positions in the universities today, particularly if you're brilliant. You'll be working behind some of the stupidest people on earth who will pick on you until you eventually leave your chosen profession. So that answers the question of a PhD. Now, with regard to your medical degree, it sounds if you're a bright enough guy, in the old days you would have wanted to be a doctor. But today the field of being a doctor is not that coveted anymore, is it?
Well, I mean, looking at the future of healthcare, kind of got an interest in science, but I'm not so sure.
Well, you'll always make a living as a medical doctor. The problem is with managed care, you're going to be answering to some dummy in the government, probably with less than an AA degree. Some AA dummy who was pushed ahead in the health department will actually be telling you, a doctor, what you can do and what you can't do. I mean, you want to answer to a moron who works for Obama or the next idiot in the White House?
Not
My
really.
Suggestion is that you become a talk show host. All right, no. If you're good in science, and the molecular biology is a fabulous field, it's fascinating. But if you're a white male, you're going to be picked on and you're going to be pushed aside for some dummy who can sit over you and tell you what to do wrong. So I don't know what to recommend. I mean, the fields of science and medicine are not what they used to be. If, of course, you had broken into America illegally or came here as a foreign exchange student, I would say go in either of those fields because the world is your oyster. But since you're a native-born American white male, I would say the future is quite dim for you in either field.
Yeah.
I'm a cynic. Look, Matt, I'm quite cynical about the university system today. They're cauldrons of communism and hatred. And I see what happened. Did you see what happened to the Spanish professor last week? I don't know where it was. Was it at Yale or it was at Princeton? He had taught there for 6 or 8 years, right? And he came up for tenure, and a couple of commie stooges in the department lower than him ran a hate campaign against him. They denied him tenure, and he had to go back to Spain because his green card would have expired. He committed suicide because he couldn't take the shame. Do you know how they got rid of him? To a girl, he raised his voice to one of the girl students at some point. She said it was considered sexually hostile. And to one of the boys who was not listening to him, one of the students, the grad students, he said, why don't you stop rubbing your crotch and start doing some work? He took that as a sexist statement, and they drummed him out of the professorship. Can you believe what's going on in these stooges in these schools today?
I can. I mean, as an undergrad, I saw it all the time. I mean, professors are so biased, and the politics in academia is disgusting, to say the least. But
right, but you, so, okay, so you're a conservative young. What year are you in undergrad?
Well, I graduated in 09. So.
You graduated what, from college?
Yes.
And you want to go back to school now?
Yes.
Whatever you do, don't get an MBA, because you'll be chasing your tail. There are so many people with MBAs that couldn't run a souvlaki stand in Manhattan. I don't think they could qualify to buy a taxi license. They wouldn't even know how to go about the payoffs to buy a taxi license today. So I really don't know what to advise anybody anymore. I would say, do you have any inclination towards business at all?
That's kind of the problem. I'm much more of I like the pure aspect of science.
You're a theoretical guy, and you really do belong in science. And if we still lived in America, I wouldn't even be having this conversation with you. You wouldn't even be asking me. If we still lived in America that was fair, you would just simply apply to graduate school and be a molecular biologist and have a career as a professor, I would guess, right?
Probably.
All right, but you're asking this question because you know in advance of asking it what kind of impediments that would be put in the way of you as a white male. Is that correct or incorrect?
That's part of the problem, and all the politics besides being a conservative.
Yes, so I don't know the answer. You know, if you had a business orientation, I would say try to develop a product and take it to market. I mean, that's a long shot, but it can be done. But you don't. You're a theoretical guy, so you're going to have to go into academia, and you may have to put up with dummies telling you what to do. That may be the price you have to pay for pursuing your chosen profession. You may have to listen to absolute morons who are your department chairman, you know, who came from some third world nation and was pushed right to the top of the heap because they pushed everyone around with threats.
There's really no room for freedom of thought.
No. There's no room for excellence in the university, if that's what you're thinking. Yeah. Excellence be damned. No, excellence be damned. Well, what do you think? We're living in China, a free country? All right. I wish I had an answer. You see, sometimes even a life coach doesn't have an answer. Only a fool would hazard a guess to tell you what to do. Sometimes it's a mixture of intelligence, an intelligent decision, and fate. What are you doing right now, by the way? I don't mean this minute, but what are you doing with your life at this time?
Well, right now I'm seriously considering this.
I'm saying, are you working right now?
Yeah. Loans from undergrad.
I'm sorry, what are you doing?
I'm just working at a local place, trying to pay back loans from undergrad. So.
Okay. What city do you live in? Florida?
In Florida.
No, I was going to offer you a job, but okay, you live too far away. All I can say is good luck. I don't have an answer. That's all. I don't know you well enough, and I don't know your other inclinations.
Savage.
Well, immigration's a big problem right now because Obama's trying to bypass Congress, and he has already done it, really. Before rushing off to Martha's Vineyard, he basically passed the DREAM Act behind America's back. And to give us his opinion about this usurpation of the Constitution is Dan Stein of the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Dan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Great to be here, Michael.
All right, so explain for the Savage audience exactly what Obama is doing with backdoor amnesty.
Well, keep in mind, this is against the backdrop of non-enforcement, virtually no interior enforcement any longer. You know, they're not doing any worksite enforcement or anything along those lines. And, of course, against the backdrop of the administration having sued Arizona and now Alabama to stop them from trying to get the federal government to assist in the enforcement of immigration law. And what this memo does now, and this new policy, is to take existing deportation cases and then run them through a screening, which, of course, will cost taxpayer money and take a lot of time and cause resources to be moved away from other important things, take those cases and pull people out of line and basically say, oh, we've changed our mind. You know, you're not a gangbanger. You're not a serial rapist. You're not a violent felon, and you're not a threat to national security. So we're just going to let you stay. We'll give you work authorization and tell you you're basically here for the duration. And that, of course, is a very broad construct sent out to ICE agents around the country and, frankly, the Border Patrol, basically saying you guys are wasting your time trying to enforce these laws because this administration is simply not committed to that. More broadly, it's a usurpation of Congress's right to decide who gets to come in and who doesn't. We have a constitutional framework where Congress makes the laws and the president executes those laws. And one of the so-called plenary powers of Congress is this right to decide our border policy, who gets to come, who gets to live here, and under what terms. The scary part about what's going on here is that the president is arrogating to himself an unlimited power to let people come in and stay in the country. And that's for a country where you're trying to guarantee quality education, taxpayer, you know, delivered services, health care, emergency rooms. The notion that somehow the president can just let people in, as long as they're letting them stay or giving them benefits, apparently the president's discretion is now unlimited. Now, if the president were to say to one illegal alien who might plausibly have a right to stay, I'm not going to let you stay, well, you know, the ACLU goes to court in a minute. You know, a state tries to pass a law that says we're going to try to screen or verify with the federal government a person's right to be here, and the ACLU is in court enjoining it in a minute. But now the president is saying, in Napolitano, are saying, if A single alien is denied a benefit by the Department of Homeland Security. The ACLU is in court in a second. Even if the alien only has a colorable or plausible claim, the ACLU litigates. Now, if a state tries to enforce immigration law in some respect or get the federal government to cooperate or verify the status of an illegal alien, the ACLU is in court in a second. But now the president and Secretary Napolitano are saying there is unlimited discretion to let millions of people stay illegally. Taxpayers have to provide the funding services. Our borders are literally out of control. And nobody apparently can stop them. The president apparently has gotten the memo. Nobody, not Congress, not the courts, not the states, not the American people, can stop the president from exercising discretion en masse among millions of people who want to stay. It's a true threat to our constitutional framework and our sovereignty.
So what changes will be made to the immigration system with these policy changes?
Essentially, they're going to continue a policy of non-enforcement. They're not going to enforce, and they're not going to pick up from state agencies or, you know, aliens who are anything other than violent felons or national security threats. So essentially, for the vast majority of illegal aliens, if you come here on a tourist visa and overstay, if you come here and, cross the border illegally and get in here and stay for any period of time, your chances of being deported are now zero, virtually zero. We have essentially unlimited immigration, limited solely by how many people try to come into the country and by the few people who actually come and commit, you know, serial violent felonies. This is a serious jeopardy. Are the ability of our society to be successful, viable, and deliver any kind of quality of life to future generations now hangs in the balance. I mean, what about Americans who are looking for jobs now? This administration could be giving the American worker a break, freeing up jobs and providing opportunities for people who desperately need them by deporting people here illegally. And now they're completely unwilling to do that. And what's so sad about this is that they're hiding behind the banner of this, they call it prosecutorial discretion, like it's somehow some inherent authority they have. Well, you know, a prosecutor does have discretion not to bring a case if they don't think it's a good case or there are other priorities. But in this case, they say aliens can come forward and ask for prosecutorial discretion. I mean, no criminal asks for prosecutorial discretion and then get work authorization. So, I mean, the question ultimately is what now are the limits of executive branch authority in giving out, you know, pseudo green cards to hundreds of millions of people? Nothing.
Okay, what rationalization, if any, are they using to impose these measures? I mean, where's Congress on this?
Well, the rationalization is that the professional ethnic shakedown artists are screaming that they won't get the Hispanic vote unless they roll over supinely and stop enforcing the nation's immigration laws. You have to see this thing through the lens of partisan politics. The politicization of our precious immigration policy is unprecedented in American history. Never before has the executive branch just unilaterally said, we're just going to forget that Congress ever passed these laws, and the heck with Congress and the American people. So as a practical matter, why should Congress bother passing any laws if the president's just going to ignore them?
Do you believe that this is an impeachable offense? Because I do.
If you have an executive branch official who is claiming unto himself limitless, unreviewable authority to run his own immigration program without regard to Congress or the courts, you know, you have these are the classic hallmarks of a tyranny. We have a system of checks and balances. We have a judiciary. We have a Congress. Their role in this apparently is zero. It's very strange that organizations like the ACLU, maybe it's not so strange, but claim to regard the rule of law as extremely important. It's why immigrants want to come here. And yet, apparently it turns out that if the rule of law is ignored in one direction, those organizations simply don't care. There are broader principles here at stake than simply immigration policy, although obviously that's what I'm concerned about. There is the legitimacy of our constitutional framework and our ability as a nation to be in charge of its own future, its self-determination. This is a very serious issue. Now, whether it's an impeachable offense, you know, I'm not the kind of expert who can pass on that, but I do believe that this should be a very, very significant political issue in the upcoming campaign, and we need candidates who are going to run on the platform. If elected, I will enforce the immigration laws of the United States.
And what changes, Dan, do you think need to be made to the immigration system, if any, other than putting up a border fence that they can't break through?
Well, the most important thing, of course, is that if Congress passes a law, it needs to be enforced. And there is this broad-based skepticism that is now taking place in the wake of this, that the American people's voice in this simply doesn't matter. If, in fact, Congress can pass a law and have it enforced, there are a variety of important legal changes that need to be made to ensure that only people with the right to be in the country can get a job, rent an apartment, get a loan, that there are all kinds of intervention points at the state level where status can be checked and then the federal government could be empowered to take people and remove them. There are all kinds of ways of streamlining deportation, ensuring that once aliens are deported, that there's finality to the process. But this administration, I mean, they simply have no stomach for any kind of immigration law enforcement except in the very narrow case of really, really bad actors. So the executive branch, clearly, it would be good to have an executive branch that's willing to enforce the law and willing to pioneer and reestablish proper federal-state relations in immigration enforcement.
What can the listeners of the Savage Nation do to stop the immigration amnesty that Obama is putting into effect?
I think we all have to rally under the banner of enforce immigration law, enforce the immigration laws of the land, be definitely in the face of the Congress. We have for years at FAIR argued that we need some kind of citizen standing clause. If this were an environmental issue or something along those lines, or the FDA, if they were saying, well, we're not going to bother testing drugs, I mean, there'd be all kinds of organizations and people who would have legal standing to go to court to get that action enjoined. Because immigration policy is sort of a peculiar, unique area of law, we need Congress to pass a standing clause similar to one that we helped draft in Arizona that allows citizens to go to court to get illegal actions of DHS and the president enjoined if they're admitting clearly ineligible aliens and allowing them to live here and use benefits and essentially steal residency at the expense of the American people.
And what's a lawsuit going to do? How long will it take?
Keep in mind that this is executive branch rogue activity run amok. The position the administration took in Arizona was the unique nature of the executive branch authority here, in our view, is virtually unlimited, and neither you, Arizona, Governor Brewer, or Alabama, or anyone else can stop us. I mean, that's what they simply said in their brief. They truly believe this. Now, historically, when we and others have tried to sue the federal government, the executive branch, for admitting large numbers of ineligible aliens, we've been told that because we couldn't tell exactly where people were going to stay or live or reside, that we didn't have legal standing. That's a dramatic, terrible loophole that's exposing the American people to the continued political pressure to relax them. It's why we have 11 million illegal aliens in the United States. Nevertheless, this cannot continue. Members of Congress, affected states, others will have to try to take legal action, have to try to get Congress to intervene, dispatch the sergeant-at-arms. I mean, something is going to have to be done to stop the rampant lawlessness that's being arrogated unto itself by this administration.
Dan Stein, thanks for joining us today on The Savage Nation.
Thanks so much.
I'll be right back. It's The Savage Nation.
Savage.
Actually, environmental regulations create more jobs because it drives innovation. There's more investment from venture capitalists into trying to invent the new technologies, which we use here in the United States, and then we export around the rest of the world.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to AmericaIsRising.com, 800-255-4199, AmericaIsRising.com. Jason in New York, you oppose the death penalty. Tell us why. You're on the Savage Nation from the great WOR.
I was going to start by asking if you think life has value.
If I think life has value?
Yeah.
I, of all people, know life has value. I have great value for human life, which is why I am opposed to abortion and why I support the death penalty for known murderers.
Okay, how does that value vanish when somebody commits murder?
Well, I'll turn it around on you. Let's start so I know where you're coming from, since I've given you a clear slate of mine. Are you in favor of abortion?
I am opposed to abortion.
So you're opposed to abortion, and you're opposed to the death penalty, so you are consistent in your opposition to ending human life.
I will say that when it comes to first trimester, then the idea of pain comes in, but that's a separate topic.
Wait, I'm sorry, you say in the first trimester you're in favor of abortion?
I say that the concept of being able to feel pain matters.
So you're not really supporting human life, you're just supporting the absence of pain, is what
I'm
you just
claiming,
said.
Why are you claiming that it's life in the first trimester?
Well, now we're going to an area that we should discuss.
Okay,
what would you call a fetus in the first trimester? Death?
It's certainly not the same as an adult or as even a baby.
No, of course not. A 10-year-old isn't the same as an adult, nor a 9-year-old, 8-year-old, 15-year-old.
Yes.
We understand that. But that's not the issue. The issue is, have you ever planted a seed and watched it grow from a seed into a seedling?
I have.
Okay, we all did that in fifth grade, right? We put a lima bean seed in water or soil, and we saw a sprout come out. Would you argue that the emergence of that sprout is not life?
We're getting a little bit off of topic here.
See, because you lost the argument. The chess game is over. I'm the grandmaster. You've just come to see something new in your own life, which is that life begins when it begins, not when the vermin who like to kill babies say it begins. So now let's go back to the death penalty. If you're a man who is so sensitive to life, why is it that you don't see the crime he committed? Let me ask you that without getting angry one way or the other.
All right. I already asked you the question, which you haven't answered, which is why does that value of life vanish when somebody commits murder?
Well, because the man has abrogated his right to life by committing such a despicable act upon a young girl.
How does that happen? How does it happen?
You mean there are no crimes that you can think of that are worthy of the death penalty? None whatsoever?
None whatsoever.
Okay, then let me ask you this. If you could have had Hitler before you in a court after World War II, where so many millions were so brutally murdered, would you say he should have avoided the death penalty?
You're bringing up Hitler, and it's a good example because Hitler's probably the most emotional example you can bring up. But the fact is I'm fundamentally opposed, which means Hitler would have to be included by that fundamentally.
All right, well, at least you're a rational man who sticks to his guns. And what would keeping Hitler alive have done for humanity?
Oh, no, it wouldn't have done anything good. But the idea is the value of life, or if we're going to say that life has any value to begin with, you can't necessarily take that away just because somebody did the most atrocious acts imaginable. And by the way,
hold on. But you don't think that the death penalty doesn't send a message to the next mass murderer or to the next rapist? That if he does it, if he gets caught, you're going to die a horrible death? You don't think that scares them?
Well, Dr. Savage, there's no evidence to suggest that the death penalty does actually deter murder.
Well, I've heard that from the left wing, but there's no proof to that matter. I personally think it creates another form of crime deterrent. The only reason the death penalty does not deter crime to the extent that it once did is precisely because the very same left-wing lawyers who keep them alive forever have given the death penalty almost no meaning whatsoever. If they were given one or two appeals and they were executed forthrightly, once it was definitively proven that they committed that crime worthy of the death penalty, I think there'd be far fewer such murders in this country.
That may be the case, but the fact is that the evidence doesn't suggest that that's so.
The evidence does not suggest that is not so because you are citing evidence of those who oppose the death penalty. I am certain I could show you evidence to the contrary, but I think we're going to have a legalistic argument, which is not what we're really interested in discussing. You are actually raising a far more fundamentally important point, which is that you asked me right off the bat, do I think that human life, how did you put it again, has value?
Yeah, fundamentally.
Of course it has fundamental value, but there are cases where a human being forfeits that right to life. It's not an absolute right. In other words, there are crimes that a person can commit that take them outside of the human family. They're no longer humans, they're subhumans.
The fact is that it's vastly inconsistent to be opposed to abortion and pro-death penalty. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it isn't, because the fetus is innocent. The fetus is a clean slate. The fetus is put here by the will of nature or the will of God, and it has an unlimited capacity to do good on the earth. But this man has forfeited his right to live. He has said, I do not deserve to live. I am less than a human being. I cannot be rehabilitated. You know, you cite statistics. How about the recidivism rate of people who were let out of jail? How about the recidivism rate of Muslim terrorists who were let out of Guantanamo? How many of them returned to jihad? Too many of them. They should have all been executed as far as I'm concerned. Why are they being released and sent back to go and kill our men on the battlefield? Perhaps even come to your city and kill you.
Can I respond?
I hope you would.
All right. I think you're getting a little bit off topic. The main idea with the death penalty is when you're killing the person, right? You're making the statement that he forfeited his right to life. Please explain rationally how that happens. That's why I'm opposed to the death penalty.
I don't understand. What do you mean rationally how that happens? How many different ways do I have to say it to you? If a man takes a young girl, brutally rapes her, pokes out her eye with a stick, bashes her head in with a rock, pokes a stick with a screw into her private parts, what has he done? Said, I'm a man worthy of living?
No, but has he said my right to life is gone now? That's the argument.
Who is it? But it's not up to him to say my right to life is gone. It's up to society to say your right to life has just been abrogated. You've just forfeited your right to life because of what you have done. You are lower than an animal. An animal wouldn't kill that way.
Savage.